Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
You're tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, hello, After Buzzers, and welcome back. I just wanted to let that play for a minute because it's so nice. We've been listening to Edelweiss constantly as we start these shows, and last week we switched over to this from the Crown Prince's speech, and I love it.
It's epic.
It is, right? welcome back, After Buzzers. This is tonight we're discussing Man in the High Castle, Episode 8. End of the world. My name is Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt. That's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T. Or on Instagram at T-Bolt, also B-O-L-D-T. And I have Keith Black back in the house with me tonight. Keith, hey. Say hi to the people.
How's it going, people? And you can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black. Super short and sweet.
Beautiful. I like it. Mine is my ancestors gave me an extra consonant in my last name.
Yeah, but you got the emphasis in it, so that's all that matters. You know, that's a T of punctuation. You know?
Exactly. Okay, well, good. I'm glad it comes off that way. We had a really good episode, I thought, this week. Episode 8 was pretty awesome. I feel like the last couple have been a little slower as far as them, not necessarily uneventful, but like it's been a lot of building tension, rising action, and I feel like we got some payoff this episode, which we've been waiting on. we've definitely been waiting on. Let's dive right in. I think that, again, there's some... This one, we didn't have quite the cliffhanger that we did at the end of the last episode, which has been sort of a motif where it's like cliffhanger and then it picks up the next second. And this one, we actually get to see some resistance members right off the bat doing a little fishing and decoding a message, which I thought was a really cool and I believe historically accurate system for how that was sometimes done in covert agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that part incredibly intriguing. I'm super into the whole spy gambit and seeing, like, you know, the drop boxes and all those different situations. Right, yeah. So seeing the cipher right from the beginning, I was like, okay, let's see what I'm going to pause it. Let's see what the card is, those hole punches. And then we were talking a little bit before the show about how, like, the writing aspect of it and, like, the penmanship, you know, the spacing, the letters.
Like, how difficult it would be. Because it's basically like it looks like a business card with some hole punches in it. And if you hold it over the postcard, you can read just the letters inside the hole punches. Yeah. But, like, to do that, you'd have to put it down and then write your message in the hole punches and then go back and, like, make a sentence that somehow fits that. It just seems like it'd be very difficult to do.
And also, your piece of paper has to be pretty much the width of a business card.
Yeah, I mean, it has
to be. You're putting this little thing on. And let's say you write a paragraph, like an 8x11 size piece of paper.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, where do I put this? Here.
That kind of leads me, I'm wondering, do you think that the resistance members, at least the ones that we've met so far, get all of their orders via postcard? Is that...
I feel that that's probably the safest way for them to receive their information, but I also think that this kind of gave us the clue to that they may be a little bit more organized than we previously thought. So having a uniform system as a cipher, I'm sure Lem is not the only one who's received something in this form or he's had to decipher a message.
Right,
so it goes to the proof that, these guys may be a little bit more...
They've got they're a little bit more savvy, I think, than we gave them credit. But again, you know, he's the man, whoever the man is, hasn't been caught thus far, so he's doing something right. But I did get the sense that that Lem was sort of, because the other two guys brought him this postcard, so they didn't have a way. I took that as them not having a way to decipher it. Like he held the key somehow, and it looked like the piece of paper that he was using was like pretty worn down, so it looked like he had had it for a while.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how long you would.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Keep that going, but I guess as long as no one finds the postcard, figures out that's how you're talking to each other.
And again, if they do, you just be like, "Oh, I'm at the yogurt stop. You know, one more hole punch, and I get a free free ice cream.
Right,
I'm good."
Yeah. Let's see. We've got we see a little scene with Ed as the Kempe Thai, which I looked that up to make sure I was saying it correctly. Yeah. The Kempe Thai come and they make him make. We find out later as we talk to him, they made a gun. But they had him make a real gun instead of just a replica. They actually had him like drill the barrel and everything.
Intimidating.
Yeah, it's intimidating, especially for Ed, who's I feel like done his best to not get involved with Frank's.
I mean, he did get involved as you can get when you shoot somebody. That's pretty much
it. Sure. But yeah, but, yeah okay, absolutely.
But while trying to not be involved, you know, like he's always just kind of I felt bad for him, honestly, when he's trying to help out Frank and Juliana, and the poor guy's doing whatever he can. He's paying for the tickets. He's like doing whatever he can to keep this couple safe, almost as though he's living through them.
Do you think he's going to get caught up in this somehow? Do you think he's going to get more tied up than he already is?
Yeah, because they didn't reveal anything towards him. He went to go pick up the bus tickets, and they kind of just never closed off that story.
That is a good point,
and
actually.
It's just so juicy about he went to get the bus tickets.
They got the bus tickets, though, right?
They never showed. They're supposed to meet him to get them.
Oh, were they supposed to? Mm-hmm. So they haven't. They don't have them yet.
Yeah, they're supposed to meet him in an hour.
Oh,
I think they're supposed to meet at the location to get picked up. Like they would meet at the bus stop and here's your tickets later, guys. It's nice seeing you. Yeah. Send the old farewell. But I did think it was super interesting when they were with him having him make the gun. I thought the imagery of how they made him look like Frank. It blew me away. I was like, wow, is he trying to be like, he had the glasses on, the hair was coming over, he had the apron on.
I thought it was a flashback for a second, just because I was like, he looks almost younger here for some reason, Ed's character.
They kind of just, they did him up, they combed his hair previously. He looked a lot like Frank when Frank was in the beginning, before he made his turn to being, whether you'd call him, not necessarily revolutionary, but, you know.
Yeah, he's definitely, I think it's safe to say he's got revolutionary tendencies. He's been stepping up since the pilot, just every episode a little bit more, but he I feel like he really stepped up this episode too. He's making demands, he's making moves, he, you know, was cussing more and just more of a man about it, I guess.
I'm using my big boy mouth and, so you will listen to me.
Exactly. And it works. It does work. We find him making the pendant. I wrote down Buffalo pendant, but it was was it Sitting Bull? Is that the Indian chief?
I believe that's who it was. And it was. I was kind of shocked by, like, is he getting his medal? Because supplies in this world are pretty scarce, correct? Like, especially for
My understanding is, I mean, it's you know, whether or not like metal itself would be rare, but this would have to be. I don't know. Is this silver? Is it?
Because I mean, how could it had to be to in order? I mean, I doubt it would just be some piece of iron, that he would have worn around his neck of any atom, because he wouldn't
have
pulled that from the ground. You know, he fashioned that from something that they have found.
Right.
And so it seems I was just kind of surprised how he was able to procure such valuable metals and materials so quickly.
It seems interesting because I'm at least we're given the impression that there wasn't much turnaround between his conversation with Robert in the last episode about. Making
let's
this thing. Yeah, like, let's do this. Just that inaugural conversation. Going into, like, him actually having it. We find him, he's basically finished it. He's putting finishing touches on it. He had to have gotten it quickly. I don't think a lot of time has passed. Now, I know he probably has some sort of access through his work. But again, that can come back to him, too. So I think that, right?
If he's about to jump town, do you really care? At that point, do you really care? If you screw the pooch a little bit, and you're like, oh, I'm burning this bridge. It doesn't matter because I'm not coming back.
Exactly.
But then if stuff goes awry. Yeah, it's pretty much the I quit thing. He's going to the office, throwing up an uproar, and then he realizes, oh, I didn't get the next job.
I didn't get the next Oh, darn. I mean, he's got to make it quick and get the money and get out. Maybe it even, like, lends a further sense of urgency where, like, now this is directly traceable to me.
And the man they sold it to, I'm kind of shocked by his just overall wealth for being a lawyer.
Right. Yeah.
Because I just, in my mind, it's
the Kasuras, Mr. Kasura, right?
Yeah, Mr. Kasura. And like law is pretty much like law and order just doesn't seem to really exist. It's kind of like a you did it, you're done type of situation. It's just a strong hand of justice.
Yeah.
So seeing a lawyer, I'm like, what real use would there be for a lawyer?
It's interesting. I wonder. Yeah, it seems, because it seems, having no specifics, it seems kind of generic. Like, it seems just like, what's a high paying, what would be a high paying job in this world? Lawyer? Maybe. maybe. But that might speak to, maybe the court of law there is based around higher ups in general.
Okay.
You know, so it would be more lucrative, I guess.
More maybe just a symbol of a profession of symbolism rather than actual practice.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's like he's granted the title of lawyer.
Yeah. You are a lawyer now.
You're a lawyer.
We don't need you for anything.
Yeah, it's almost like feudal in a way.
But he was also at the, I mean, not to jump ahead too far, but I just noticed that they cut a quick shot of him at the club that Joe goes to in the end. Which I thought was very interesting. They did a quick shot of him.
I missed
sitting
that.
In a booth. Yeah.
I totally missed that was him. So interesting. Okay, cool.
So it makes me, I was just leading the fact that maybe his money isn't purely from law.
Right.
Because he's just writing out 80,000 yen checks.
Right, yeah.
For no big deal.
For a necklace presumably worn by an Indian chief.
Yeah, that's frivolous.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't need that. That's a lot of money. And it seems like $80,000 goes a long way. Or 80,000 yen goes a long way in the society. I know if anyone listened to last week's episode, we talked about sort of the we actually like crunched some numbers as far as yen goes, but 100,000 yen would be less than $1,000. It would be $800-$900.
Yes, $854 if you broke it down now, but like you said last week, the depreciation and how like the economic value would be considering who won the war
probably
shifted.
That has to be what it is, because I mean they treat 10,000 yen, which is just $100.
They
treat 10,000 yen like it's a lot, like it's, or $85, I think is what it was. They treat it like it's a lot of money. So it's got to be that when they won the war, the yen appreciated and the dollar probably just vanished, I guess. We don't ever hear a dollar mentioned. It's all yen and credits and stuff. I think that is probably an explanation. But
And also the guy was going to sell the video to the resistance it was something simple. It was like 10 yen or 100 yen or something
that. Oh, that was 10,000.
Yeah,
that was 10,000.
Oh, yeah, 10,000 yen, correct. Yeah, so I mean, if he's going to sell this video, and he knows he's risking his life.
Right,
the value
clearly.
Has got to be. Your life has to be worth more than he risked it and he lost.
Ooh,
he played the super lottery. Yeah, Powerball didn't play out for him.
Yeah, that would change. That would change the, I think, the numbers in the lottery a lot. If it was like, if you lose, that's it.
Yeah,
you get your neck. It's like garrote wired. I don't know exactly how they took him down.
It's a rough way to go. I mean, you just don't want to get caught by the Yakuza that way.
Right. Well, especially not the Yakuza, I guess. Well, that brings us back to the club. It seems like, I mean, this is a Yakuza run.
Yeah.
Which the Yakuza is like the Japanese mafia. Mm-hmm. Yakuza-run gambling house, I guess, or den?
It was gambling houses and then brothels and lounges, stuff like that.
Right.
Mentioned when they were having the back and forth with the Secret Service, the Japanese Secret Service.
Right, the Kenpei Tai.
The Kenpei Tai.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to say it wrong.
No.
I can come up with another.
I thought it was Kappy Tai at first, and I was like, that doesn't sound Japanese. I was like, there's some other.
It sounds like an after-school special.
Exactly, the Kappy Tai. That was a fruitful Google search on my part. Kenpei Tai. We have some interesting stuff go on with the Japanese police in this. Inspector Kido is...
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's great. He's... it seems like he's getting close to wit's end in a lot of ways, and we sort of see why. Because if you remember a few episodes back, we saw the previous, I think, like lead inspector commit seppuku, commit suicide in like a garden, and then he was handed the reins. So it lends a lot of credit as to why he's having to be such a hard ass, basically, this whole time, is trying to figure out where this film is to try to nail down the resistance.
It's a just reason to be
hard. If I saw my predecessor off themselves out of duty, I would definitely feel a lot of pressure to get it right the next time around. But we have, okay, so we see the resistance members, which is Lim, and what's the woman's name?
I don't recall her name either.
I don't know if she mentions it much.
Yeah.
We see them come across or come to pick up this package and pay 10,000 yen. And it doesn't work out because the guy died. The guy who had the film died. And they get Yakuza, have it. And then the Yakuza also goes to the Kenpei Tai, which is the police, and offers to sell it to them for 150,000. This is what I was a little bit confused about. So it seems like the police turned the Yakuza down, right? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
So what would have happened if they didn't?
If they just accepted the cast and received the film?
Yeah.
I think that the Kempeitai, they now would have the film in possession.
Right.
Now, whether they give it over to the Nazis or not is a whole other question. Because what we saw at the end was the basic trap between three parties. We had the Yakuza, the Kempeitai, and the Joe in there.
Right.
So we had the Germans in there. And nobody really knows the other person is in there except for everyone knows the Yakuza's there.
Right.
Everyone knows someone's going to be there.
And the Yakuza, I feel like, knows that everyone else is there, too.
Correct.
The Yakuza,
yeah.
I think that it was interesting because, to skip, I guess we'll talk about the actual final scene later, but we're left sort of with, like, a what's going to happen. Like, this was sort of a cliffhanger as far as, like, I have no idea exactly what's going to happen with Joe and Juliana next. But until we get there, I'd like to go back to the Eastern Coast and visit our good friend John Smith, Obergruppenführer.
Yeah.
God, that was such a good scene. Him in the doctor's office. So we find out that his son wasn't allowed to participate in gym class or something like that, or wasn't allowed to participate in the run or the race. And John Smith goes to see the doctor and learns, God, this was a really powerful scene, learns that his son has a degenerative disorder and will only have months to a year of function left, really, before.
So his heart, what's got to be the most heartbreaking news as a parent to hear about your kid, you know?
I couldn't imagine. I mean, I couldn't imagine just what that would be like on that level, but also there's a stigma, and something I didn't even think about when the scene started, this huge stigma against being invalid, I guess, in the Great Reich. You can't not pull your own weight.
Yeah, you can't exist.
Yeah. So he gives, I mean, John Smith gets this ultimatum, basically. It's not even an ultimatum. It's just, this is what has to happen.
Do, yeah.
Yeah, you have to basically kill your son because he's now going to be an invalid, and the state doesn't tolerate that.
It's so incredible just in the situation of how the whole scene unfolded. We start with, like you said, oh, his shoulder, you know, oh, I think it's just pulled muscle. It's him being very fatherly.
Right.
Which we haven't really get to see him be fatherly.
Yeah,
it's more authoritative.
It's kind of nice, I guess, to see this other side. It's a little creepy in a way because we've seen him in a more dominating position before, too. So to see, I guess, the softer side is nice, but still unsettling.
Yeah. But we got that look into his heart, and then so he goes to the doctor, and you're like, wow, he's taking his kid, he cares about his kid, he's taking him to the doctor, and just by him doing that, I kind of felt something was off. I'm like, he's going to get some bad news, the fact that he's going to the doctor. This is a big setup scene to bring him to the doctor. And the doctor, I loved this. The doctor, the second he sits down, we need to talk to him, he offers him a cigarette. And I'm like, that's classic. He's like, you know, sir, a cigarette? He's like, no, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm a doctor, but you should smoke. Yeah.
You should. I do all the time. It's perfect. And so they have that conversation. And my first thought when he said it was congenital, I was like, oh, no.
Yes.
Like, this is karma. Such sweet karma. I mean, not great for the kid, but in terms of who this man is.
Right, exactly.
This is justice on, like, you know, a superficial platform.
And if we look at it, I mean, you know, not that this is... not that you want bad things to happen to anyone, but I mean, this kid is sort of being groomed to be exactly like his father as far as upholding the state and being a servicer to the Nazi party. And it's sort of, I wonder if it's karma for John Smith as much as it's karma in, like, preventative karma for this kid.
For who the kid's going to be. And it's not the kid's fault. That's the bummer of it. He didn't know, you know.
He has no idea.
And his father is... You know, his father's ridiculous. Like,
he's
one of the most strict men ever, and he doesn't even know what he does as, you know, in terms of work. And so his corporate life, like he mentioned later in the episode, oh, what's troubling you? I've just got some work stuff in my mind. When I've got work stuff in my mind, it's because, oh, a segment didn't go the way I wanted it to, stuff along those lines.
Right,
his work doesn't go the way he plans. Like, people die. It's like, super dark. You know,
horrible things happen.
Oh, sweetie, you know.
Oh, it's nothing.
Work was rough today.
Yeah, that's very true. And he's faced with this. The doctor was nice in that it seems like he's going to give him a little bit more time to deal with this thing with his son, but I think this is going to be a big sort of sticking point over the last couple episodes as far as seeing what's actually going to happen between him and his son. He ran the race. He ran the race later. It seemed to do well. I mean, he seems perfectly healthy.
Yeah, minus being a little tired.
Yeah, but I mean,
you
know, if I just ran a race, I'd probably be more tired than he was, I guess. I don't know. It's going to be hard, I think, for his character, because he's one of his big stances has been like, I will exact evil in order to protect my family.
Absolutely,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? And so now it's to protect his family, he has to sort of do the opposite of mm-hmm. that. Like, if he wanted to protect his son from the Nazi regime, he would have to betray the Nazi regime. And I don't know if...
would make himself a hypocrite for everything he's done.
Exactly.
It would negate everything he's pretty much done for his family.
Yes.
Would now be pointless. I think this is the first instance where his faith in the Reich is not just tested, but it's tested on a personal level. Before,
yes,
it's easy
level.
To say, I'm doing this for my family, I'm doing this for my family, because he can see a tangible effect. Oh, look how well I'm doing. I'm doing this, I'm making more money, my family's being more provided for.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the first time where, oh, something the Reich believes is really kind of biting me.
Yeah, like big time.
This is the biggest thing for him, and this is what he's been fighting for, like you were saying. He's now, if he follows the Reich, he's killing his own child. Everything he fought for led up to the death of his child.
Yes, everything. Everything that he's ever supported, every government agency he's mm-hmm. worked for, is now they are killing his kid.
Which is now, I think, the one moment that we get to see over the next couple episodes will be whether he wavers in his resolve to stick through the Reich.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, you would have to. I mean, you would have to at least hesitate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a sane human being, you wouldn't be gung-ho about it, you know? You would at least pause in thinking, like, this is an institutionalized rule established by men who are flawed. We're looking at this thing, and now I have to kill my son according to this law that I uphold. Mm-hmm. But now it's... now I see how it's not right, I guess. I don't know.
And he's got the balance of his older brother that he has to weigh. He saw his older brother, Edward, suffer.
Well, that's the thing. We find out later that his older brother had... I don't know if it's... Originally, because we see him in a wheelchair in an old photograph.
Palsy or something like
that. Yeah, I was thinking like palsy or maybe polio, because I know that was a
big
deal.
Back then. Yeah,
back in the day. And then I was thinking maybe it's the same degenerative disease, which I didn't write down the name of the disease, but was it Lou Gehrig's? Or I don't think it was Lou Gehrig's.
Actually, I hadn't heard of it before when he mentioned it. It was definitely something new to me, and I was like, I was intrigued. I was like, I feel like I would have heard of...
yeah, something. I'll go back and look at the notes for the episode just to make sure. But essentially, it's going to leave him paralyzed over the course of the next year or something. But it looks like maybe this runs in John Smith's family, mm-hmm. do you think? I mean,
I think absolutely,
if his brother
yeah.
had it, that he was probably a carrier for it and just pass it on.
And he
to
has
son.
To blame himself. He definitely has to blame himself.
He has to blame himself for everything. I mean, the man's got a lot to blame himself for, let's be real. But this just adds to the list. And
because,
this one affects him in a way that a lot of the other things that he's done haven't. A lot of the other things that he's done have just affected other people.
And I think he's out of veil, and this is the first time that what he's done, he actually can blame himself. Everything else, he didn't blame himself because he had reasoning that he felt was more powerful than the issue at hand.
Right, yes.
Now
it's like a greater cause.
There's no one else to blame. There's no one else to what's the greater cause of killing his son? And they never showed us him grabbing the injection, so we don't know whether he took it. We don't know whether he brought it with him. And he also has the option that the doctor gave him where you can get a second opinion.
Right.
But that means it was going to go into public light.
Exactly.
And if it's found to be true,
then
there's no way you have to kill your kid.
In
the man of your stature.
Or maybe you won't even get to, or you won't get any time left.
And
is he saying,
way.
Like, I will give you some time?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there's any possibility that the doctor's wrong?
I mean, 10 out of 10 on the nerve test. He did 10 out of 10. He said it all checked out. I mean,
if the doctor is somehow trying to... like, what if the doctor is just trying to get him to kill his son for...
That's a maniacal.
Yeah, oh, right. Saying, like, hey, you can go talk to another doctor if you want, but if you do that, then you're not going to have the few months that I'm going to give
risk.
You
yeah.
or I'm going to pull this file. I don't know. I wonder if he'll talk to him about it. I wonder if John
he'll
Smith
go back
will,
to the doctor.
Well, not necessarily talk to his son about it. Maybe that, but maybe.
I think next episode they'll probably break down with the wife, and she'll get an inkling that something's
she'll know that
something's
wrong.
Knows the kid's been tired lately, and John marks it off as always a teen. You know, teens are always tired,
right?
And
yeah,
it's not
yeah.
just growing pains. So she's already suspicious. There's something up.
Yeah,
with the kids.
That's true. He's maybe not acting quite the same. God, that's going to be complicated.
Yeah,
he had a big episode. After the difficulties at home, we have his superior, and this was really cool because we got to see sort of for the first time him be
subordinate.
Which
he never has.
Never.
Yeah.
He is the subordinate for the first time in any of the episodes here in episode 8. Obes Gruppenführer, which I'm assuming is just a step up from Obergruppenführer. Which is his title, arrives Himmelreich, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, I wrote down the phonetic way. Heinrich.
Heinrich. Oh, wow, I was off. I think Himmelreich was my dentist when I was growing up, actually. He was not an Opus Gruppen juror, though, I'm pretty sure.
That's a positive dentist,
though. Yeah, it's really good. That's the first thing I look for
man
in a dentist.
Man with the iron heart.
Yeah, you're not a Nazi member? Great, okay. Yeah,
what a nickname, though. That was Heinrich's nickname, man, with the iron
heart. Oh, I thought you were talking about my dentist for a minute.
That would be a great nickname for a dentist.
I wouldn't say that about him.
I will remove that cavity with...
yeah, nothing at all.
You will feel nothing.
No, I'm not sure I would go back to that dentist. Himmelreich was great, though.
Yeah.
Just a shout-out. So Obes Gruppenfuhrer comes in, and so one of the first things I loved about this scene is he, for the first time since, like, just seeing random snippets of, like, Hitler during VA Day or something like that, gives us a little bit of a hint about what has happened outside. Because up until this point, we haven't had any verification that the Germans, that the Nazi Party had done any of the other historical things.
Yeah, advanced.
Yeah, exactly. So because, I mean, let's be real, this whole series is based on the fact that World War II went differently.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure how much weight to give historical accuracy as far as what actually did happen and relate that to the show. But he talks about the enslavement of the African continent.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a lot of African campaigns. I mean, there was a lot of fighting in Africa because the Nazis had a lot of control of Northern Africa. And then the U.S. and the British fought that control. And then we have what else was it that he said? He was talking about the extermination of the Semites, I believe was the quote. The slaughter, the Holocaust.
Which he was proud of.
He was proud of, and it seems like they did it, essentially. It seems like they finished the work that they started there, which is sort of horrifying to think of. But we got our first taste of, so these things did actually still happen as they did in history. And then he goes on to sort of put John Smith in a precarious situation regarding Rudolph and his relationship with Rudolph.
So some animosity towards him.
Yeah. So Rudolph was captured by, this is something I wasn't quite sure of. He was taken by John Smith's men, not by like the SS or not by some external division. And we got to see some sort of limitations. Like, it seems like he doesn't have, it seems like he's part of a very specific, agency. Yeah. Is that right? Because I
felt like his unit almost, it seemed specifically, when Heinrich was talking about him, he was mentioning specifically, you're in charge of the Man in the High Castle films.
Right.
He's placed you directly in charge of that. And he's like, well, yes, he had. He says it condescendingly, and then John Smith replies proudly, yes, I am. And like, in fact,
yes,
I am in charge of that.
Yes, he is trusting me with that.
It does make it seem like it's a very secular.
Yeah, which I didn't really get that impression before. I thought that he was just like a general, just like a higher up. But it's like he has a very niche application.
Basically, he's
in control of a task force, tasked with retrieving these films from the resistance, or at least preventing them from getting their hands on them in the first place. It seems like Obes Gruppenfuhrer has him sort of in the palm of his hand. Like he has, knows what he wants. He's coming. He's not allowed to take this prisoner away, but he's going to just because he can. I guess he has more men. I don't know. It just seems like, well, you're not going to stop me.
Yeah, it's like, I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's like I have my troops and you have your men, and we're not going to fight. Like, I'm just going to do this. So, I can't. Too bad. But it again puts John Smith in a precarious situation regarding his own personal matters. Because just like the issues with his son, is he has an emotional attachment with this man because he has a lot of history with him. I don't know. I mean, how would you... He hasn't tortured him.
Which is surprising.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess he's just got... I guess some of the stuff that we saw... Because you were here for episode 6, right? The VA Day.
Yeah,
because we talked about how distraught he was.
Having to bring him in, yeah.
Yeah. And it's all of that is real. I mean, I wasn't sure at least how much of that was truthful, how much of that was him actually being really sorry about this.
Turning him in.
Yeah.
Let me pose this to you. Okay. Now that we've seen his relationship and what he's learned with his kid, and now he's facing that mortality of his situation, and, you know, like we were saying earlier, everything that he's done, now he can't justify if he has to kill his kid. Maybe Rudolph was actually that first essence of wow, if this guy that I thought was a brother in arms and I thought was my twin in terms of what our justification of what we had done is now wavering in his beliefs and is willing to betray the fatherland for his beliefs.
Right, yeah.
Am I wrong? Like, have I been wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Resolve been what? So maybe that's why there's that.
It's interesting.
It wasn't a doubting of or a remorse towards, you know, turning in his friend Rudolph, but more of his self-reflection going, oh, no, Rudolph. So he's keeping him around because he feels he can get that information out of him. Because that's going to reflect on him. He's more trying. He's digging in Rudolph to find out about himself, kind of a situation.
Right.
So him being removed from the facility, not only is he like I can't wrap my head around the idea that he actually cares strongly about Rudolph. I just don't see him being a compassionate man in terms of regardless of war bonds.
Okay. Yeah. I can see. It could really go either way.
Yeah.
I could see. I mean, here's the thing. If he hasn't tortured him, I think that is a show of solidarity. You know what I mean? Because we've seen him have no problem torturing men in the past.
Yeah.
Like, it's just no big deal. Like, we just torture
flog him until he speaks.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that was episode two, I think. And so the fact that he hasn't harmed him at all, he's just been trying to get this information out of him peacefully, shows that he still cares in some way. He can't quite bring himself to do that, or he at least feels like he owes it to him.
And he did say, I haven't tortured you yet. You know he's going to. He's going to torture you. So, you know, tell me what you know now, because, you know, I'm kind of your buddy. And like, I'm the only friend you got right now.
Exactly. He'll try to get it, get him off easy, I guess.
Or I'm not really, flies with honey.
I'm not really sure what he could do, though, in this situation. It seems like this guy's going to come take him either
regardless
way.
Of him giving the information. I got what I needed. You guys can go home. I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't see him
way.
Being like, oh, okay, great.
No, thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Well, now we're going to torture him and get him for ourselves, too.
And that relationship, though, like, Heinrich was super condescending towards John.
Yeah.
And I think we learned a lot about John in terms of him, like, the speaking of German.
Yeah, you brought that up right before we started the episode, and it's really interesting, because I wonder if, you know, I'm first thing I thought is, this guy didn't fight for Germany.
Mm-hmm.
This guy didn't fight for Germany in the war, because there's no way that your name is John Smith... And you speak only English, you don't speak German, and you fought for the Germans in the war, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the timing doesn't add up, especially because of his age, probably would have been in his 20s when the war was happening.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't speak German, he wouldn't have been a German nationalist.
There's no way, yeah. I think that... I think he was an American soldier. Or at least was... I mean, probably, yeah. Rudolph, I don't know if Rudolph... Well, you know, we saw it. We've seen precedents where we saw the first episode, I think, the police officer who stopped Joe
was an American soldier. Yeah,
and then now he's a police officer. And then talking about, you know, oh, they burned the bodies on Tuesdays, whatever it was. It was, why is there
a sandwich?
Yeah, he gave him a sandwich, exactly. So we've seen that has happened in the past. I guess it's possible. It adds a lot.
It's a huge character.
It's a huge character point. Yeah, I mean, I just assumed this whole time that he spoke German.
I think personally now, I think that makes him weaker in my mind. I think, I think he's kind of spineless in the fact that he can waver like that.
Yeah.
That his resolve's not as strong as the resistance.
Yeah.
Where they're willing to die for a simple idea.
Right.
Whereas he's like, ooh, my team lost, I'm going to switch teams.
Right. Well, I think he cares about family. I think that's the most important thing to him. You know, he even says, like, I've done all this to protect my family. That's what he tells Rudolph. And I feel like it's come up before this also. So if that's the case, now that Rudolph's in jeopardy, who he considered a brother, now that his son is in jeopardy especially, who is his son, what are you going to do there when all of a sudden you put state first so that you could put family above it?
Exactly.
And then now those two things are in conflict.
I see him, because of his spineless attitude, by flipping over the war, I see him abandoning again, flip-flopping once again, and saving the kid. I think that we've seen, this episode gave us heart in John Smith that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
It showed compassion. They set it up earlier with VA Day celebration to show that he is a human and not just a monster.
That could happen.
I think this is the slow build to him flip-flopping as well.
Yeah, he's become such a dynamic character. I mean, because initially, I guess I saw him as the face of the Nazi Party.
That's what I got.
Yeah, within this show, and it's
up to last episode.
Yeah, he's not that way anymore. Maybe the introduction of Obest Gruppenführer is so that we can. Sort of put that on
strong
him.
Figure,
So that we can put the face of the Nazi Party on this guy instead of.
He's creepier.
Like, yeah, he's creepier.
He fits the bill.
That was a great scene, though. And we see that his first lieutenant or whatever that guy is, I forget his title, knows exactly how to serve. Yeah. Yeah, knows exactly how to serve the copy to Opus Gruppen Fuhrer. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? I have a couple of theories as to how he knows.
In a situation like that where they've already doubted him mm-hmm. once, they were the dudes that got in the whole roundabout with Russian roulette in the basement,
right.
which is terrifying.
Right, yeah.
I think that you're in a situation where this guy comes out. I mean, John Smith is too observant, and he's too speculative of everything going around him to not think that that guy potentially could be the traitor.
Right.
Because in that meeting specifically, the conversation was the topic of, oh, you still haven't found your traitor.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, well, I would have found it. It was like I would have found my traitor. You know, like you haven't found it yet. And the dude is doing something after basically being caught in a lie.
Yes.
So you're being pride about this, and you're like, whoa, I'm not sure. You're like, what's going on right here?
Yeah. How did you know exactly how to serve him his coffee? That's odd. And I was like, these are some interesting, like, these are some very Tarantino shots of sugar cubes and stuff. I was like, there's something behind the sugar cubes.
Long four cube shot.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's super, super interesting. Because
that's a lot of sugar, too.
That was a lot of sugar. That's way too...
It's like diabetes.
But it's like I actually kind of loved that because it was very much like the excess of like the upper regime mm-hmm. of an autocratic party like that. You know what I mean? It's just... You can live in excess. You can have the finest whatever you want. You can have four sugars.
Yeah.
It's like the commodities are easily accessible to you. I think, I don't know. I guess I could save it for predictions, but nah, I don't want to. I think that the giving away the route for the threat on Obergruppen Fuhrer's mm-hmm. life was an inside job. Like I think it was this other guy. Like, I think it was the, whatever his agency is. For whatever reason, they wanted to take out John Smith.
Yeah.
And that's, now he has to deal with that. He's got a lot to deal with right now.
I think that's a perfect reflection on what we were talking about earlier, though. Mm. If they're the German party, there's obviously, the harmony is not there.
Right.
Within the German party. So there's a little bit of disruption going on within the ranks because he's assassination attempt on John.
Right.
But then we see Heinrich come in and he's a little condescending and almost like he doesn't look at John as like he's a true German.
Right.
Oh, you don't speak German. Does
he
that
doesn't.
Keep him behind? So maybe it's these pure Germans that believe that the ranks should be cleared, and they're the ones who still look at John as, you know, let's go with Harry Potter reference, a half-blood.
Right, yeah, he's the mud-blood. Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, gosh, okay, well, he's going to have a big next episode, I think. He's got a lot to work out at home, at the office.
at the office.
Yeah. We've been talking about Rudolph a little bit, so I'd like to throw back. I caught a little something between Juliana and Togomi
mm-hmm.
On the other side, back in San Francisco. We have... So Juliana comes in, talks to Togomi for a minute, and he has like an assignment for mm-hmm. her. And the assignment is that there's a general coming in to look at uranium deposits.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Can you help? Because she's done some geology in her past.
Yeah,
studied
geography and something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was like, will you, you know, help figure out where these deposits are and stuff. That was like, oh my gosh, it's happening.
Yeah.
Which explains why I feel like Togomi knows something. Like the last few episodes, it seems like Togomi knows something. You know what I mean? He knows something else is going on. And all of a sudden, you have this general coming in looking for uranium deposits. Wonder what that could be for, you know?
It's not making some jade necklace. They're making a bomb.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They're making a bomb.
They're making a bomb.
And Togomi gave her, in the previous episode, gave her the address to find her sister.
Right, yes.
And so he knows that her sister was a resistance member.
Does he?
Yeah, because his assistant
informed her.
So they know that, and he was like, oh, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. I'll keep my eye on her type of situation.
Right, right.
So I think that he's kind of doing a testing ground to see what he can learn from her. And when she didn't return, she never came back last night. He wasn't surprised. He's like, no, she never came back. Like, you can see there was some
Do you think he wasn't? Because it seemed like he seemed sad.
I think he was disappointed.
I thought he was very sad.
But she's returning.
Yeah.
She's returning. There's no way she's going to get on a bus and leave.
She has an attachment to him, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she felt bad when Frank said, hey, we're leaving now. We're leaving tonight. She was like, no, there's this Japanese man who's very kind to me. Like, there's a connection there, which I love for whatever reason. Like, I love their relationship. But the uranium deposits, I just think that Rudolph, that was the film.
It was
plans for the bomb.
And huge info.
Oh, I mean, God, the biggest.
Uranium's coming into town. Would you mind, should not be sharing that with this woman.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why? That's a huge show of trust. And I don't know, even as much as he trusts her, I don't know if I would trust her with that, you know?
Well, she didn't even bring it up.
Yeah.
So it leads me to believe maybe she doesn't know that how the bombs are made, because you think she met with the resistance after finding out that information.
That's true.
I'd be like, oh, hey, postscript.
Also, just so you know,
guys coming in to find uranium.
Like, so I think that the Japanese are building a bomb.
It could be a kind of a big deal, guys.
Which actually I think would be a good thing for the resistance. I think that
their power equating to the Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. Because what you don't want, if you have two big powers, you can play them off each other. Yeah. You know what I mean? But if you just have one
monopoly.
Yeah, basically. That's it. Like a monopoly, so omnipresent, I think was the word I was looking for, government, where it's just like they control everything. There's no way out.
Oh,
there's no way to leave like Nazi-controlled territory. It all of a sudden gets a lot more difficult to deal with that as insurgents. I think that was a big oversight. She really should have said something to resistance members. Either that or she just doesn't know. But I feel like she's not leaving. And to
she's leaving.
To speak to him, why he might have trusted her, I just had the thought that he has been doing like some subversive stuff thus far. You know what I mean? Like he was working with Rudolph and he was, again, it really seems like to the benefit of his nation. Like it really seems like in that between him and Rudolph, like, Togomi had everything to gain, and Rudolph had absolutely nothing to gain in that scenario. You know what I mean? Other than the fact that his world is unbearable for him.
So, your relationship between Rudolph and Togomi just sparked me remembering the fact that, remember when the whole purpose of Rudolph was to get those plans, and we had those pictures of the plans we were showing earlier, it is of a chemical compound, which looked like we suspected it may be how to build a bomb.
Yes.
So Togomi's bringing in this scientist to find the uranium deposits, for him is a positive, it's not a negative issue.
Right.
Like, I was thinking that's something that he'd be avoiding, but this is his plan coming to fruition.
It seems like this was his plan all along, so he kind of wants, it's almost like he likes the fact, at least I took it this way, that he might like the fact that she's a resistance member because she's not adhering to the Japanese state, just like he's not.
Yeah.
But also, like, here's the thing, if you're the emperor of Japan, are you going to be pissed off if you find out, like, oh, my trade minister, like, secured this
atomic bomb?
Yeah, secured, like, the biggest technological advancement, weaponry at least, related in my lifetime or yours, that this thing happened, this weapon was made and ended this enormous war. You got this? Awesome. Like, there would be no scolding.
Go into a Cold War stance now, though.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you know, I I'm not saying that, like, that a lot of nuclear bombs are a good thing by any means, but as of right now, the Nazis are the only ones that have the technology.
Yeah, like you were saying, you're right. It's great for the Japanese. That's exactly what they need.
Right,
you know,
I don't know. It's just the whole
situation
is getting more. on a film platter. It's getting a lot more tenuous. I really want to know what's in the film that the resistance wants, you know?
And when he opened, so we go afterwards, we see the, you know, what transpires with Juliana. Mm. And so they go to the location. She finds out from her stepdad, oh, you got to get out. Everybody knows about the plot to get the film.
Right.
And so she can't get the uranium. So she asks, she's like, oh, I can't meet the old man to get the uranium.
Yeah.
And she's got to go save Joe.
Right.
And the interesting situation with that, that scene is they're in there and they go to the bar. Everybody's converging on one location, and he opens the film to check that he has it.
Right.
Two things. My first thought was, she said, "Leave your coat," you know, and then they'll put the film and leave the money and put the film. And they'll swap it out.
Yeah.
I don't have any coats that are big enough to hold a film
like that,
like in their pocket without someone seeing a giant film.
I thought she said the lining, like they were going to sew it into the lining. But
is that what they did?
That's what I thought, but it didn't look like
he
took it
into
from
his
the lining.
Pocket.
It looked like he got it from a pocket because there was no ripping of the coat to get to the film.
She's like
just
a little seamstress. One minute, I'll have your coat.
Yeah, how long was he in there? How long did they say?
They just had a drink, so he had a beer. It looked like a Red Stripe.
Okay, good for him. I'm glad. Yeah. Well, I'm glad for Red Stripe.
They're still in business.
Yeah, they're still in business. Good for them. He gets a film. We presume it's the film.
But the film was what I was going to get to next, is the film was so minuscule. When he opened up the container, the canister, it wasn't a full reel of film.
Right.
So maybe the fact is there are chunks. Every one of these is a piece to a greater film.
Oh, interesting.
So because every time they've opened it up, it's never been a full canister. It's always been something that's been rattling around, and it's a small couple film strips in there.
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe this is something they're going to have to glue together to create whatever this revolutionary, you know.
That's interesting. Well, it also means that, like, if you're missing just one of these, that's a big deal.
Exactly.
You know what
it's
I mean?
The puzzle.
If you're missing any piece of this, that's horrible, because you need all of it for it to be cohesive to make any sense, I guess. Well, the more the better, but...
And it would go in tangent with the idea that it's difficult to, you know, they have to transport these films across the country. And just like anything that you're trying to procure in a state like this where you're subservient to everybody around you, you can only do it in piecemeal. You can't.
Yeah.
We're going to shoot this big production. Like, when they shoot it, they're probably guerrilla shooting, doing whatever they can in small situations or where... with the film releasing it in small batches.
I'm still just not convinced that they're shooting this live. Like, I'm not convinced.
You think it's historical footage?
I think it's just, I mean, it just doesn't look, from the little bits that we've seen of it, like in the pilot episode, it just does not look, it looks like real stuff.
Because we've seen it.
Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess that's true. I guess it could be, and it's just, it actually is historical footage in real life, so it looks that way, that it is real, because it is real. Yeah. Maybe that seems also, I don't know, that kind of seems lazy. It seems like they would, if they wanted it to seem like it wasn't real, they would have just shot some fake footage.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that doesn't look like it was real. I don't know if they just would have used the stock World War II victory footage.
I mean, they even had a newspaper that said that he was, when John Smith was at the table reading it, it said, "Celebrations on VA Day." And it was like they're printing newspapers. So, like you were saying, they probably weren't lackluster when it came to.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll just use old archive footage. Guys.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Don't worry about it.
They're doing a lot of work for that. I don't know. That final scene, though, was awesome. It was really intense. We have Frank, he gets the film, he leaves, the Kempe Tai show up, and then they run through an alley, him and Giuliani, oh, because she's there now, and with the other two resistance people, it's just a hodgepodge. They run through the alley, and then a black car pulls up, and people with guns get out and put them in the black car. End of episode.
Yeah.
So, do we think?
Yakuza.
Yeah, okay.
Yakuza.
I thought so. I think it's the
car
Yakuza.
Was too nice.
It was a nice car. Yeah. It was a gorgeous car. Yeah. Like, for real, I would love that car. It's like it looks like kind of like a Bentley, but
Maybe an old Rolls Royce.
Yeah, it looks like an old Rolls Royce. That's exactly. God, it's sleek and black. And just very, very mafia.
Not the way I would like to ride.
At
gunpoint.
Yeah,
but it was definitely super interesting seeing that come out.
That thought in the back of your head would still be like, well, this is nice though. This is like a very nice car.
Yeah,
like, I might die.
I don't want to be here, but the leather in here. Just wow! Yeah.
If
is this real?
If I want to die in a car, at least it's this car.
It's a Rolls Royce. That's good. Yeah. See, look at you're a glass half full type of guy.
I guess if I think in this world you have to be. You have no other choice.
You guys take Third Street; it's faster. You're like, thanks for the note. You're a
great. Right. I think we have just a couple minutes left, so let's go ahead and go into predictions.
Okay, let's bring that music on.
And now you're after Buzz TV.
Yes.
Predictions.
All right. Prediction. Lay it on me.
I'm going to predict about why the Yakuza showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a situation where it's unfolding. They already got what they want. It's an easy transaction for them, but they go back to the bar and put them in. So my prediction is that they're trying to double down, or now they're actually, the Yakuza is intrigued at the potential profit of this film because the Yakuza saw what everybody was doing to get it.
Right.
So now they're thinking, oh, well, 150 yen, 1,000 yen, that's not nearly, like, there's a lot of people showed up trying to get this film.
Right.
Like, this is a
yeah.
huge thing. Let's get involved. So I think we're going to get to see the Yakuza and actual, like, organized crime get more integrated into our storyline moving forward.
I hope so. I really hope so. I think that, I don't know, I think that it's interesting, because the first thing I thought was, mm-hmm. oh, they're screwed. Then I immediately was like, no, I think that they're probably going to get out of this fine, because the Yakuza, the Kempe Tai pissed off the Yakuza, is what it seems like. So the Yakuza would have an interest in screwing them over.
Yeah.
Just, it seems sort of like, I don't know, it seems like organized crime has that. There's a lot of about like reputation.
Pride,
like,
honor,
probably known. It's like, if I say that it's going to be this way, if I make this deal, like, it's going to be that way because I can. So I don't know. I think that I would like them to get more involved because, A, I think that's crazy interesting, and B, I think what an awesome, at least sort of sometimes ally that might be for the resistance. I predict that John Smith is not going to kill his son.
I predict that.
But I predict that his wife will.
Ooh. His wife is dark. She's sadistic.
I predict that she will pick up the reins and do it if she has to.
That's a bold prediction. I like that.
Yeah,
that's
we'll
good.
See.
That's juicy.
We'll see. It's at least interesting, I think, but who knows if it'll actually happen. But I just think that's just based on the glimpses that we've seen, it seems like that's a perfect opportunity for him to waver and then for her to pick up the slack and do it. So.
Ooh, but that mother's protection, that's a hard thing to break.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to break.
I mean,
but she even says, like, you know, I'm so glad we live in a state where they're not allowed to suffer.
But he said that type of thing too prior to actually being presented
the
issue.
So.
But I mean, that's a bold prediction. I like it. I think it's good. I think this is definitely a juicy thing to come forward.
Awesome.
If it does, I'm going to be sitting there going, dang, Taylor. Like, that was a dark and accurate prediction.
Yeah. Well, we have two more episodes. I don't know about you. At the end of this one, I was like, gosh, I just want to watch episode 9. But I can't, because we'll be back next week with another episode of Man in the High Castle here at AfterBuzz TV. Thank you guys very much for tuning in tonight. My name is Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt. That's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T. Or on Instagram at T-Bolt, also B-O-L-D-T. And I'm here with Keith W. Black.
Yeah, and you can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black. Go ahead and comment on the YouTube, and we'll get back to you, and iTunes, and all that other Twitter and all those.
Yeah, please follow AfterBuzz on YouTube. Follow us. We have our podcast on iTunes. If you want to leave us a review, we would absolutely love that. Either way, we will see you next week. Thank you guys very much,
Thank you, take care.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.